Greetings, this is Richard Solon.
And I'm Kendall Solon.
And this is Solon and Solon, Letters to the Inquiring Mind on Theology and Scripture. This is Richard Solon. You know, over the years, I've often read or heard it said that this famous person or that has just declared that God doesn't exist, or that there is no God. And in the classroom and other occasions, I've been asked to prove the existence of God to this self-proclaimed atheist or skeptical person or agnostic. Now, when statements like these are attributed to people famous for their brilliance in another field, it's natural to assume that they are equally knowledgeable in fields not their own, such as theology. Now, I think the public's inclined to believe, for example, that if a cosmologist who knows so much about this enormous universe of ours says that there is no God, that they must be right, since they are right about so many other things. I recall a statement by John Polkinghorne, former astrophysicist at the University of Cambridge in England. He happens also to be an ordained Anglican priest. He cautioned that a quantum mechanic is no more likely to be a philosopher than an auto mechanic. So, brilliance in one field does not assure brilliance in another. Theology and science are two different things. And when we're told, for example, that so-and-so has announced there is no God or that God doesn't exist, we are expected, as theologians, or simply as professing Christians, to react in some way, be disturbed. Well, the problem is that the statement, "There is no God," is meaningless. It's like being told that there's no X, or X doesn't exist. For if you don't know what the word God refers to in the sentence, "There is no God," then you don't know whether to agree or disagree. You know, words matter. I'll take the word "to exist," as in the question, "Does God exist?" Technically speaking, using words in their precise meaning is imperative. I know of no theologian who would say God exists. Things exist, even in its form of pure energy. God is not a thing. Things exist in time and space. In this sense, you can say you exist, but a unicorn does not. To say God exists is to imply that God occupies time and space. God would then be the greatest thing imaginable, but the God imagined would still be a thing. So the child's question becomes quite logical. "Mommy, who created God?" That's perfectly sound reasoning, but it's a child's reasoning. That's why theologians avoid words like existence when talking about God. They're not talking about a thing. And I was fortunate in my student days to study with Paul Tillich at Harvard. I wasn't a Harvard enrolled student. I was at Boston University, but we had access to classes over at Harvard, and Tillich was a big draw. Tillich preferred to refer to God as the ground of being. God is not just another being alongside all other beings, even if the greatest of all beings. As the ground of being, God is the mystery that enables and sustains all beings in their being but is not a being itself. Now, before we leave this topic, I want you to think about the verb to exist. It's a compound verb derived from two Greek words, the preposition ek, meaning out of, as in the word exit, and histamine, meaning to cause, to stand. We get the word histamine from it. So the basic notion underlying the idea of existence is to stand out from something. How we say a rock exists. It is three-dimensional. It stands out from nothingness. In form, it stands out from the molecules of which it is comprised. We say a tree exists, but a tree differs from a rock. It not only stands out from nothingness, it interacts with its environment in a way a rock does not. We call that difference life. A tree interacts with sunlight, with carbon in the air, with water in the ground. It propagates itself, and so on. The famous microbiologist and evolutionist, Lynn Margulis, used the word aware. Awareness, she argues, goes deeply into the nature of living things. Well, let's go further. We say the squirrel in the tree exists, but the squirrel stands out from nothingness in conscious ways, more profound than a tree's awareness. Consciousness is a level of existing, of standing out from mere being. Then we say, human beings exist. As human being, we stand out from our own physicality. We exist in time and space. Now, consciousness so transcends its physicality, its fleshiness, that it can and must create its own being by conscious choices. It must decide what kind of being, what kind of self it is to be. This perhaps is the pinnacle of human existence. In being, we become our own project. To be a human being, and I would say to be made in the image of God, is to focus on this self-relation. One can say the essence of human existence is precisely in self-relation, in self-experience, in standing out from the self, the body, and making decisions. And we soon discover that the fact that self-relation cannot exist independent of relationship to the neighbor, to the other. We are born into a relationship of dependence at birth. It begins in the womb. It is sustained in life by the mother's love and care into which we are born. And no matter how far you trace that loving care back in time, it is there before we are. Now I wonder, do you think it is possible that God, or whatever metaphor you wish to choose, do you think it is possible that God arrives at God's own self-relation in us? This thing is certain. Nature transcends itself in us. The universe transcends itself in us, in the conscious mind. On a purely secular level, I find it startling to think that nature had the mind in mind before the mind had nature in mind. This standing out from itself is what the word existence means. This is Richard Solon.
You've been listening to Solon and Solon. Letters to the Inquiring Mind on Theology and Scripture. If you're enjoying this series, please take a moment and rate us on iTunes. You can learn more about this podcast at solinandsolin.com.